broadcasting from Dublin, Ireland, and around the world on TalkingBrawlsMMA.com and iTunes. You're listening to Ireland's premier mixed martial arts show, the Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts Podcast.
This is Mike Dolce,
Ian McCall, Jan's Little Evil Pulver,
the Crippler Chris Levin, and you're listening to
Talking Brawls.
And I am back to Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. And as you may have heard there, we've launched a website so you can now listen to the podcast on www.talkingbrawlsmixedmartialarts.com and obviously on iTunes. And we're back, back obviously after a crazy weekend last weekend, UFC on Fox 10, Benson Henderson versus Josh Thompson, where Josh Thompson, in my opinion, and a lot of other people's opinion, was robbed of a decision victory. You know, some crazy judging yet again in the world of mixed martial arts. Sal D'Amato, amazes me that that man still has a job, scoring the bout, I think, 49-46 in favour of Benson Henderson, which is just, it's astounding in my eyes, and especially the fact Josh Thompson was injured as well. You know, just, I don't know what to say anymore about these commissions and what needs to be done in the sport. It needs a complete overhaul, in my opinion. Okay, guys, on the show today, we have a stacked lineup ahead of UFC 169 tonight. From the Prudential Center in New York, New Jersey. First of all, we'll be joined by Mike Bond from MMAJunkie.com and USA Today. He'll be talking about UFC on Fox 10 and UFC 169, which obviously I mentioned takes place tonight. So really looking forward to that one. Also on the show today, we have Artem Lobov, the Russian Dublin man, comes on to talk about it. He's been a bit of stirring going on Twitter between himself and some other guys in his division. Great guy, great interview. Obviously teammates with the likes of Conor McGregor, Kyle Prendit, Chris Fields, the guys down at SBG here in Dublin, Ireland. Also on the show today, a man who's co-main eventing tomorrow night, going up against the champion, Jose Aldo, for the UFC featherweight world title. So that's going to be a barn burner of a fight. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But yeah, just in general, guys, if you hit up the website, really would appreciate that. And obviously subscribe on iTunes. You can catch me on Twitter at Talking Brawls and at Niall McGrath 4. So hit that stuff up. And, you know, really looking forward to this weekend. It's going to be an absolute barn-burning card. But, you know, what else can we say about last weekend? You know, I talk about Mike Bond now in a couple of minutes about the judging, you know, what needs to be done, all that good stuff from last weekend. And we obviously also talk about a few of the fights last weekend, and we talk about UFC 169. So, yeah, let's get to it. Without any further ado, let's get the first interview of the day. I caught up with Mike Bond from MMAJunkie.com and USA Today. So take it away, and then we'll be back to talk with Artem Lobov and then Ricardo Lamas later on. All right, thanks, guys.
Hi, this is UFC lightweight TJ Grant, and you're listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to welcome back on the show, good friend of the show at this stage, Mike Bond of USA Today and MMAJunkie.com. Mike, listen, brother, I really appreciate you coming back on the show again. How are things with you? How was the Christmas period and all? I know we're into the end of January now, but how was the holiday season for you?
Yeah, it was great, man. Just got to go home to Vancouver and spend some time with the family, so that was nice. Don't get to see them too often, so yeah, it was great. How about yours?
Ah, great as always. A few drinks here and there in Dublin. You know, nothing. Out of the ordinary, so yeah. But anyway, Mike, let's get things kicked off. Another crazy weekend of mixed martial arts. They're coming hot and fast, obviously, at the moment. Just want to get your opinion, your take on the Josh Thompson Benson Henderson fight from UFC on Fox 10 last weekend. First of all, how did you score the fight? And you know, what did you think of the judging in the fight?
Man, I had it for Thompson. I scored it 3-2 for him, and which was interesting because Matt Erickson, who is our guy on site there, when he was scoring it ringside, he had it 4-1 for Henderson, and people were all over him for that. Yeah. So that was interesting, just how, like, who knows how, and he was saying ringside too, so maybe he was seeing something similar to that one judge. I don't really know, but I personally thought Thompson won. I rewatched the fight afterwards, and I mean, it was a close fight. It was just kind of a weird fight because, like, Thompson had his back a lot, but like he never really, really threatened with the choke, and Henderson wasn't really landing anything significant. Yeah. I think like most of the strikes were to the body, and that's the thing with Henderson. Like his style is just so weird like that. I was talking to my buddy over at Fight Metric, who does like obviously the UFC statistics, yeah. and he said of Henderson's like 500 or so significant strikes he's landed, only like around 30% have been to the head. The rest have been to the body, and that's like well below the UFC average, which I think is like somewhere above 50%. So like that's kind of interesting. And I think he only landed 11 power headshots on Thompson that entire 5-round fight. So it's just kind of weird how his style, like he throws a lot to the body, and I don't know, it's kind of hard to say. But I do like, after rewatching, I don't think it was like the worst decision we've probably seen in the last couple of months, but I do think Thompson won the fight, so I don't really know like what else you can say. It was just another questionable decision, but they're coming fast and often at this point, so I don't really know what we can do. But
so in your opinion, can we genuinely call this a robbery? No,
I don't really think it's a robbery. I think that word gets kind of overused a little too often, but I do think Thompson won the fight, and I thought like the rounds I thought it was pretty clear, but who knows? Like those 3-2 fights, you know, all it takes is you seeing one round super close, and that makes the difference in the fight. So it's really hard. But I think that 4-1 scorecard was pretty outrageous. Yeah. And I talked to our guy, and like he got a lot of flack for that. But I thought a 4-1 scorecard was not fair at all. But I guess even if it was 3-2, Henderson still would have won. So it doesn't really make that big of a difference in the end.
And there's a judge that, you know, constantly seems to be in the spotlight, and that's Sal D'Amato. You know, what can we do about this? It's getting to the stage, you know, with the TRT and, you know, all the poor decisions we're seeing lately. You know, there's uproar. I'm sure it's going to put people off watching the fights. Should the UFC, I know, are the governing bodies that, you know, not make wholesale changes in their judging and officiating and, you know, their rules in general?
Yeah, I mean, there obviously, clearly there needs to be some sort of overhaul made, but who really knows? Like, that's just a long process, and I think we've kind of talked about it before. These athletic commissions, their funding is so limited because they're all government agencies, and you know, the government isn't really putting large amounts of funding into athletic commissions for combat sports. They obviously have much bigger and more significant things to put their money towards. So it's hard to say like what kind of changes can they really make with the budgets they have. They do need to make some overhaul with judges. I'd like to see more new guys come in, more ex-fighters, stuff like that. But in terms of doing like a complete overhaul, I think stuff like that takes money. And right now, like a lot of those athletic commissions don't have it.
Definitely, completely agree. And speaking of Josh Thompson, what's next for Josh? You know, I know you're good friends with Damon Martin as well as myself, and Damon wrote a great article during the week that he believes Josh should still get a title shot. Do you believe this, and what do you think? You know, Josh talked about possibly, you know, if Fox were to offer him a job, he'd go with that, but, you know, things are up in the air. But do you think there's a possibility the UFC might grant him a title shot after this fight?
There was maybe a glimpse of hope for a little bit there, but now you hear Dana White talking at like the UFC 169 pre-fight scrum about how they want to do Anthony Pettis and Jose Aldo if Jose Aldo wins this Saturday against Ricardo Lamas. So that really doesn't seem like it's going to happen. It seems like Thompson's kind of out of the picture. I don't really know what he wants to do. He was talking about retirement kind of for a little bit there, but I don't really think that's what he's going to do. I think he was just burned out from doing the back-to-back camps. Definitely. For Pettis and then for Henderson. And yeah, so I don't really, it's hard to say what's next for him. He's obviously going to, if he wants to fight again, he's still one of the top 5 guys in that division. So he's clearly going to fight someone who's up there as well. And if he gets maybe one win, put him in there for a title shot after Aldo, if he makes it that far, or if Aldo loses, who knows? You know, there's lots of things have to happen, but right now I don't think he is going to be getting a shot at the belt.
Definitely, man. It'd be a great shame if Josh was to call it a day, because he's still a very marketable guy, and there's a lot of great fights out there for Josh, in my opinion. Just moving on a little bit, Mike, I know you wrote an article yesterday, and you spoke with Frank Mir. Can you just clear up, a lot of people are really confused about how Frank Mir got clearance for his therapeutic use of TRT. Can you just clear up what's going on for us if you wouldn't mind?
Well, I believe Mir first got the therapeutic use exemption for his fight at UFC 146 with Junior Dos Santos when he fought for the belt. And I guess his reasoning was kind of the same as all these guys came forth. He said he went to a doctor who said he had low testosterone, all that kind of stuff. We kind of know the story by now with all that. And yeah, he got the therapeutic use exemption for that fight against Dos Santos, and then he got it for his 164 fight with Josh Barnett. And I just asked him in our interview if he got a TUE, and he told me yes. So I just followed up with the Nick Alembo, who's the head of the New Jersey Athletic Commission over there, and he responded saying he had to wait a little while, and he finally told me they usually will not talk about this type of thing or release public records about fighter like medical stuff. But he said since Mir himself had told me that this he was on it, he could release information. He basically just said they went off the exam in Nevada and Wisconsin for those two fights, and they had the doctor look at him. But he said they were, in his email, he said they were testing him thoroughly, doing hair, blood, urine before the fight, the night of the fight, like after the fight a few times. So it sounds like they're testing him pretty heavily. And then I don't really know if the UFC is doing their own stuff, checking him out on top of that. But yeah, Lembo said they're testing him pretty hard. So I guess Muir is going to have his TUE for TRT for this fight against Overeem on Saturday.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Yeah, I think that cleared up, because I think a lot of people are confused about, you know, the way it was released so late in the day that he was actually, you know, using TRT for this fight. But moving on a little bit, before we talk about Alistair Overeem and Mir, that fight, there's a big fight for John Lineker, Ali Bogatinov, I think the pronunciation is right. First of all, talking of John Lineker, regardless win or lose, you know, we know he's a good record in the UFC, but, you know, three of those fights he's missed weight. Should he be cut if he misses weight, regardless of the outcome of this fight?
Yeah, if he misses weight, I think four times, I think that's too many, like way too many. I think I don't even know who's up there with the guys who have missed weight a bunch of times, but I think Anthony Johnson only missed it like two or maybe three at worst before he got cut. So four would just be insane. And Lineker, if flyweight was a deeper division with more contenders, who's to say he wouldn't already been gone? Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of a special, because, you know, he is a guy who is really talented. He's not some bum who's like low in the rankings. He's a guy who, if he makes weight and wins this fight, is probably going to be fighting for the belt. So we know he's like a top guy. But yeah, if he misses weight for this one, like, that would be absolutely ridiculous. And John Morgan over at our site, MMA Junkie, did an interview with him either last night, I think it got put up on the site today, and he said his weight is on track and that it's not going to be an issue. So who knows? I believe he said that before the last fight, but I would be shocked if he missed weight for this one for a pay-per-view for all this stuff. So who really knows? But I'd be very surprised if he missed weight.
Definitely. It's a really intriguing fight as well. The Russian looked, you know, really good in his last outing. You know, what can we expect from this fight? Do you expect John Lineker to go in there and, you know, sort of command his title shot with a dominating performance?
I mean, it's interesting. I did pick Lineker to win this fight, but he is the underdog on the betting lines right now. So, you know, they're giving Bagatinov a lot of respect here. And these guys are pretty similar to each other in terms of styles. They're good on the ground. They hit ridiculously hard. They can scramble well, and they're both very exciting fighters. So this is an extremely close fight. It honestly could go either way, but the stakes are extremely high, and I'd be surprised if it went all three rounds. These guys both hit extremely hard, so I think we're probably going to see a knockout here, and whoever does it is probably going to get the title shot, Demetrius Johnson.
Definitely, I completely agree. Mike. Okay, Mike, moving on. Alistair Overeem versus Frank Mir. Obviously, I think we all know it's a loser leaves town match now. I know you spoke to both guys, and Alistair said to you he dropped his muscle mass in order to increase his cardio. You know, what should we expect in this fight? Both guys, obviously, you know, being you know, in trouble in the past.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to say. I mean, if you're just looking at it clearly, like, what I think is going to happen is Overeem is probably just going to clinch him up against the fence and do what he's kind of done his last few fights and just throw those knees to the body. Because if you look at a lot of Mir's losses in the UFC, especially his knockout losses, they've mostly been against the fence and the clinch. And we saw how much trouble he had with Cormier against the clinch or against the fence, the Barnett fight. A lot of those losses are knockouts, Carwin, all those things. So I think if that's Overeem's strategy, it's probably going to work out really well. But it's interesting. He's over in Thailand training for this fight, and who really knows what's going on over there. It's kind of a new camp for him. He said it's been great for him, but I've kind of heard otherwise. So yeah. I don't really know. And then Frank Mir left Greg Jackson when he was over there doing the – he went there for his past two fights. Now he's back in Las Vegas where he's kind of trained his whole career. So it's really hard to say where both these guys are at. And I don't really know. I'm picking Overeem because I think he's going to win in the way that I kind of described earlier. But who really knows? These guys are both pretty unpredictable when they get in there. And especially when it's a heavyweight fight, really anything can happen, as we've seen time and time again.
I definitely agree with you. I'm going to go with Alistair as well in this fight. I think he'll, as you said, have too much up against the cage. But I know you're speaking to Frank there as well. Did Frank mention any reasoning why he left Jackson's camp?
I think he just went back there because kind of the same reasons he didn't really want to leave there in the first place is he was 0-2, but he likes to be close to his family. He's a really, you know, being a father is kind of equally as important to him as being a fighter. So I think that's probably his main motivation to go back there. I didn't ask him that question specifically because when I did talk to him, I wasn't aware of the fact that he had changed his camp. But he seems like he obviously knows how important this fight is for his career, and he needs to go out there and perform, and a 4-fight losing streak would obviously be devastating for him. So he needs to perform, but this is an extremely tough matchup for him.
Definitely, I completely agree. It's gonna be a good fight anyway, I think, but I think it's gonna end early. Moving on, the world featherweight title is on the line on Saturday night. Ricardo Lamas versus Jose Aldo. The UFC, it amazes me. I think they've done a very, you know, sort of average job on promoting this fight. I believe in Los Angeles still, there's still UFC 168 posters up. Do you think the UFC could have done more to, you know, promote this fight specifically and, you know, possibly promote Ricardo Lamas, more, give him more, you know, spotlight and things like this? What's their thinking in this fight? I know Dana White's already talking about a potential super fight between Aldo and Pettis. Do you think the UFC have gone about this the wrong way?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously think you could have given this fight a little more shine, but, you know, I guess when you have Uriah Faber on the card, you don't really need to, like, promote much else. I mean, they do have him in the commercial, but, like, Uriah Faber is obviously the grab. So, I mean, what can you really do at this point, especially with Aldo, who can't, like, speak English that well? Lamas has been out there doing a ton of media, I think, in these last couple weeks, especially. He was, like, at the UFC on Fox last weekend. So I think they've really done as best they can. I do think they could push Aldo more, but this main event, especially, it's kind of weird. They obviously were going to put so much promotion into the Barao versus Cruz fight, and then there was only a few weeks before they had to replace Faber, and Faber's still a big name, so they kind of have to push that forward. So it's kind of a weird situation, but I mean, what can you really say? Aldo has kind of proven in the past that he's not a huge pay-per-view draw at this point. So I think this fight, with the attention that the main event is getting, if Aldo can go out there and perform, that kind of could be the fight. If he gets a big knockout or something, he could break through here and then, you know, really start becoming a star.
Just one thing that sort of, you know, it's caught my mind the last couple of weeks, and I think Ariel Helwani mentioned it to Ricardo Lamas. Why was this fight not on the UFC on Fox 10 card? Would that not be the sensible thing to do, have the hometown guy, you know, fighting in his home city for a world title against, you know, one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world?
Yeah, no, that would have made a ton of sense, and it seems so easy to do that, but who knows what the decision was. I mean, maybe Aldo and Brower are teammates, maybe they still want to fight on the same card together. Maybe Fox and kind of they wanted UFC to have this in New Jersey, so maybe they wanted to have as big of a card as possible with two title fights. And who really knows? I mean, that fight would have seemed so easy. And kind of like I said about Aldo, he hasn't had the best pay-per-view numbers and stuff like that. So it seems like having him on Fox against Lamas would, you know, be a huge thing for them and get them a high rating. But I really don't know why they made the decision to do this, but it seems kind of weird. I agree with you.
Completely. Okay, moving on to the fight itself, Mike. You know, if there was ever a guy I personally believe to beat Jose Aldo, it's someone like Ricardo Lamas, you know, brings to the octagon. The guy is, you know, he's such good ground and pound, you know, when he gets to the deck and if he can get it to the deck against, you know, obviously one of the guys who's the best defensive takedown record in the UFC. You know, what can we expect in this fight? And if there was a guy to beat Jose Aldo, is Ricardo Lamas the man?
I don't know if he is the man, but he certainly does have the style that kind of like you explained, where he does have the tools to win this fight. But really does, man. I mean, Aldo is just so, so good. I think if it was like another point in time, if maybe Aldo wasn't around the division or the champion, maybe Lamas would be the champion. But I think he's just kind of in that situation with like similar to maybe the light heavyweight division. There's tons of good guys out there, but you know, you're not beating John Jones just because he's a level above everyone. So I just kind of think that's what Aldo is at this point. And I think it's just going to be the typical fight that you kind of see out of him defending takedowns, lots of leg kicks and kind of picking a shot, and if he can eventually land that huge blow, I think it's gonna be a good night for Ricardo Lamas. No, I meant it's gonna be a good night for Ricardo Lamas. He's gonna like go to sleep.
All right, sorry, I beg your pardon. Okay, man, moving on, obviously the main event of the evening. You know, the UFC haven't promoted this as part two for obvious reasons. But Uriah said previously, you know, in the last fight for the interim title at UFC 149, that he wasn't motivated for that fight against Barao. Do you think he's motivation now?
Well, definitely. I mean, how could he not? This is just such a big card, and like the spotlight is all on him. He's the main event, all this thing. And I mean, I was at that UFC 149 card where they first fought. That was the first UFC event I ever covered in person as media. And I kind of could see it there. I remember like thinking back, he just didn't really seem all that fired up to kind of be there. And so I could see where he's coming from when he says he didn't really have that motivation, especially when he was moved off the UFC 148 card where Sonnen and Silva fought for the second time, and just so much stuff went on for him. But now, like, this is kind of just the perfect storm for him. It's kind of everything went against him in that first fight, and now everything's kind of going for him. He's filled in there, like, he's on this huge role right now. So I think this is kind of perfect timing for Faber.
And speaking of Barao, you know, there's a lot of people saying, you know, this is his era, you know, he's going to dominate for the foreseeable future. You know, what has Uriah got to do? Has he got to implement, you know, we saw him in the last fight against McDonald, his stand-up looked a lot more, you know, ready and more confident. Is that something where, you know, he can possibly hurt the champion? Because we saw him get a little bit rocked against McDonald just under a year ago at UFC London.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he totally just Faber. The thing he needs to do, I think, that's going to be most important is just being very aggressive. I mean, he can't let Barao set the pace of the fight. Once he does that, and once he kind of starts to get his timing down and his rhythm in, he is incredibly, incredibly hard to beat. And that's what Faber needs to do to kind of win this fight. He needs to mix it up his tacks a lot. I mean, he only shot for takedowns in two of the five rounds in the last fight. And I know he did have the broken rib and stuff like that, but still, he just needs to mix up his offense a lot more and kind of keep Barao guessing as much as he possibly can. If he can do that, it's going to be super, like, that's his best route to victory, I think. Will it work? I mean, Barao is still so good, but if he can do that, he has a better chance than he did in the last fight.
And what way ultimately do you see this fight going down?
Oh, man, I picked Barao he's just looked so dominant in the UFC, and he's just looking like he's getting better and better. And who knows like how good this training camp is being with he's down there and with BJ Penn, and he's on the same like the exact same schedule to fight as Aldo. Who knows, maybe they just both come out and just peak so perfectly. And I just think his rhythm, he's so technical, and just like kind of like I said, once he sets the pace of a fight and kind of gets going, he's incredibly hard to beat. And I think he's gonna do that, and once the longer the fight goes, the better he gets. So I think that's gonna be huge for him to kind of take it into the later rounds. And I think he'll probably we'll see another decision out of this fight, but I think it's definitely gonna be more exciting and more eventful than the first one.
Definitely. Overall, what kind of card do you think we're gonna get on Saturday night? How do you know, pay-per-view ratings, etc., on a night of fights. Do you think this is going to be a good night for the UFC on Super Bowl weekend?
It's so hard to say. I mean, Dana White was saying today that the event is sold out in terms of tickets. So that's obviously a good sign for them. Is that going to translate to pay-per-view buys? I'm not really sure. I'm not too crazy about the preliminary card for this event. I mean, there's a couple good fights on there and interesting guys, but there's nothing really that stands out there. The main card is awesome, though. Mm. So many good fights on there. I'm looking forward to every fight on that pay-per-view. So, I mean, I don't really know what they should expect. I think last year, year, the Aldo and Edgar fight that was on paper or Super Bowl weekend. I think that did around 300,000 buys. So I think we probably see something similar to that. I mean, who really knows with Faber though? It's kind of a weird time with the Super Bowl. Are people going to be going out the night before the Super Bowl and partying? Are they going to be staying in so they can wait and party all day Sunday? Yeah. Who really knows? It's tough to gauge.
Definitely. And on a side note as well, we know Ricardo Almeida, former UFC fighter, is going to be judging on this card. You know, as we've mentioned at the start of the interview here, Mike, you know, more guys should possibly, you know, getting into judging ex-fighters. How much of a plus is it to have this guy on the card?
It's definitely a plus. I mean, you can go back if you want to go on like MMADecisions.com that track scoring and look at some of his fights. I mean, he's got a couple wrong in my mind, but, you know, like generally, if you kind of look at his track record so far, he's generally been a great judge. So I think it's only beneficial to have a guy like that on the card and sitting ringside, especially I think he's doing one or both of the title fights. So especially with the potential of those going the distance, I think it's great to have him there.
Brilliant stuff. And just before we wrap it up, Mike, will it be a clean sweep for Nova Uniao on Saturday night? No change in your mind?
I think so. I think both champions are going to be holding on to their belt in this one. I mean, if I had to pick one of the two that was possibly going to lose, I'd give Faber a better chance of winning than I would Lamas. But right now, I have a hard time going against Brouwer, although they've just looked so incredibly dominant, and it's hard to see that really stopping at this point until they do lose.
Always great to have you on the show, as always, Mike. Mike, when are you going to get over to a European card?
Hopefully soon, man. I mean, they're doing lots of events over there. I hope so. I'd love to come to the Ireland show. That would be a dream come true.
Definitely get over here with Damon. Mike Bone from MMAJunkie.com and USA Today. And where can the guys find you on Twitter, Mike?
Mike Bone, MMA, MikeBohn, MMA, right on Twitter. And yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for having me, and it's been awesome.
Thanks as always, brother. Appreciate it.
This is Mike Dolce. You're listening to Talking Brawl.
And that was Mike Bond from MMAJunkie.com and USA Today. So hit him up on Twitter, as he said there, MMA, or some Mike Bond, MMA. You'll catch him on Twitter. Great guy. Always great to have his insights. One of the top guys, up-and-coming guys in the world at the moment. Really, really knows his stuff altogether. And a big thanks yet again to Mike for coming back on the show. We've had Mike on the show many time before. Okay, guys, massive card. Obviously, if this you're listening to this now, it's up a little bit late. I had an absolute nightmare last night. My whole editing system crashed on my Mac last night. First time it's ever happened, so I do apologise about, you know, the show being up so late, so close to the card. But, you know, these things happen in life. You just got to, you know, soldier on and just get on with it. Isn't that right, Lee?
Yes.
Yeah. my little nephew here, he's helping me out here in studio today. So good to have him here on board as well. So obviously, as I mentioned earlier on, hit up www.talkingbrawls.com. But okay, guys, let's just saying there, I gave a few fight picks. We've learned that John Lineker actually missed weight originally, but obviously he cut down the extra pound. He weighed at 127 and came back in at 126, so he's good to go for tomorrow night. And, you know, that's really lucky for him, because I believe, you know, if he hadn't have cut that extra pound, he'd be looking at fighting probably somewhere elsewhere, regardless of his winning streak at the moment. So that's an absolute barnburner of a fight to look out for as well. I do believe John Lineker is going to win this one. I think his stand-up's going to be too good for Ali Bogdanov. And I think it's actually a really good bet, because he's gone in as an underdog in this fight. Bogdanov has looked very, very impressive in his last two outings. Also, beating Tim Elliott last time out, that was a really, really impressive performance there. But I do favour John Lineker. I think, you know, we saw that performance at UFC Fight Night 35 against Phil Harris, where, you know, his stand-up is just so good, and that massive liver shot where he caught him. And that's where I think this fight's going to go. I think it's going to end in the feet, and I'm going to look at probably John Lineker taking this fight in the late second, early third round by a TKO victory. I think Alistair Overeem, as I mentioned there, is going to defeat Frank Mir. I think, as Mike said very intelligently, you know, Frank Mir often suffers when he's up against the cage, and especially a guy like Alistair Overeem, you know, his clinch work is so good up in close against the fence. You know, I know he lost Travis Brown last time, but Travis was in a world of hurt, and I don't think Frank Mir will be able to sustain Overeem's power if it gets up to the cage like that. And, you know, as we've mentioned in the past, Frank Mir's chin is possibly a little bit questionable. So I look at this fight finishing quite early. I'm going to go late first round, early second for Frank Mir. But, you know,
this card as a whole, I'm not overly mad about the prelims, in fairness, but the main card, you know, you can't question how much quality the main card is tomorrow night. And obviously, guys, you can hit it up on, if you're over this side of the pond, it's going to be live on BT Sport, and obviously it's going to be on pay-per-view in the States, so you know, can't wait for that one. It's going to be an absolute burner. One fight that does, you know, another fight that does stand out, another guy I'm looking forward to seeing is Ally Aquinta again. He goes up against Kevin Lee in the prelims tomorrow night, and a guy who's really improving the whole time under Longo and Sarah BJJ there in New Jersey, along with Chris Weidman. Just you know, he's steadily improved. We saw him in London. You know, his stand-up looks so good. I'm really looking forward to that one. But another fight, it's going to kick off the main card tomorrow night, is Varner versus Trujillo. Abel, a guy we've had on the show in the past here, you know, coming off that performance last time out against Roger Bowling, where, you know, he looked so good. It was the Abel Trujillo of that we first saw in the UFC when he made his debut, really powerful, you know, great stand-up. Then we saw him against Nurmagomedov, and, you know, he got taken to town in that fight. But, you know what guy is going to be able to handle Khabib Nurmagomedov? Very few of them, very few guys are willing to step up and fight him at the moment, as we've been led to believe. But I think Varner in this fight is going to have the upper hand. I think as an all-round mixed martial artist, I think Jamie Varner has the upper hand. Trujillo's standing is very good, but if you try and get him on the deck, you know, we saw against Nurmagomedov, you know, he doesn't have much, you know, questions to answer. His cardio, both guys, in fairness, cardio has come into question in the past. But I'm going to look at Jamie Varner in this fight. I think if he gets to the ground, he's going to get a submission victory. So that's where I'm going to go with this fight. I'm going to go Varner, early second round, submission victory. I think Trujillo, you know, he's a very good stand-up fighter. Where he can win this fight is on the feet. But I just don't see it being the case. I think Varner is just going to have too much for him as an all-round mixed martial arts. But a very, very exciting fight all the same. Okay, moving on to the co-main event. Before we get to the co-main event, we might as well just get the interview now. So before we get to the co-main event and main event of the evening, I caught up with Artem Lobov of SBG Ireland right here in Dublin, Ireland. So yeah, and I talked to Artem a little bit about, there's been a bit of controversy this week on Twitter. He's been calling out a few of the guys in his division, and he's obviously had a fight announced for March the 1st here in Dublin, Ireland, against Ian Elland, which is, you know, going to be a barn-burning card here at the Helix. As you know, it's great to have Cage Warriors back, and I think they're going to be here more than ever this year, which is great, and always, you know, deliver a top quality promotion. Europe's number one in my opinion anyway, and a lot of other people's opinion. So let's get to this interview with the one and only, an absolute legend of a guy, Artem Lobov. Great interview, and guys, I'll be back to talk about the co-main event of the evening and the main event, and we'll be talking to Ricardo Lamas later on the show, so check it out, guys. Thanks.
This is Matthew Immortal Brown, and you're listening to Talking Brawl.
Delighted to welcome on the show Artem Lobov, a man who I haven't talked to in quite some time. Actually, I think the last time we talked to him in person was at UF Sweden. First of all, Artem, thanks a million for taking the call, mate. How have you been?
Yeah, I've been good. Thanks very much, Niall, and thanks for having me on the show.
No problem at all. Artem, first of all, over the last week or two, I know you've set up a Twitter account and you've been calling out most of the featherweight division in the UK and Ireland. What's the thought behind this, and what are you hoping to get out of doing this?
Well, I've only called out two guys at the moment, but for different reasons, actually. One of them is Chris Fishgold. I've called him out because I believe that his record is padded and he hasn't really fought anyone good. And the thing is, there's one thing I really like about UFC is that everyone has to fight each other. Like, look at boxing, you know, how bad it is for the fans to have to wait for, you know, Pacquiao versus Mayweather, and it still hasn't happened and might never happen. You know, in the UFC, we get to enjoy Silva, Weidman twice in, like, the space of 6 months. I mean, this would be impossible in boxing. So if this is happening in the UFC, and this is what's been, you know, the reason for their development, I would like this to be the same on a lower level of MMA, which is here in the UK and Ireland. But for some reason, guys are trying to avoid that. You know, they try to avoid the taking hard fights. And then the rankings people are pushing them up the rankings, which are farther, you know, giving them another incentive to not fight anybody good because they're still moving up the rankings. So I don't like that. So I decided to, you know, step in and change that a little bit. Well, I tried anyway. As you could probably see that my challenge was quickly turned down with a million of excuses. But hey, at least I tried. Yeah, I was just going to say, then the second guy that I called out was in Entwistle. Yeah. And the reason I called him out was because in the past he has said that I turned the fight against him down, that he offered me a fight and I said no. And that was absolutely not true. Everybody that knows me would know that I've never ever in my life turned out any fight against anyone. In fact, my conversations with my coach go as far as he sends me a name and I reply with a yes. And that's pretty much it. So, you know, I just wanted to point that out to him and say, look, if you're saying I turned you down, I didn't. The challenge is here. You want to fight? Let's do it.
And do you think guys need to do this, Artem, in modern day mixed martial arts? Because, you know, we see in promotions quite a lot of the time, you know, who I'll fight whoever, you know, the promoters want me to fight next. Do you think it's a real statement of intent for guys to do this and they should be calling out guys to get fights?
I absolutely think so. I mean, people sometimes see it as disrespectful calling somebody out. But I don't see it that way, you know, because the reason people see it that way is because it is the sport of fighting. But if you look at it, for example, if I was a professional golfer and somebody else was also a professional golfer and I asked him for a, you know, round of golf, would that be disrespectful? No, it wouldn't. This is the same thing. I'm asking a guy who trains all his life to fight and he does this for a living. And I'm asking him to fight. So how is that disrespectful? I'm just asking him to do what he loves to do and something that he trains to do.
Definitely.
Don't see that as being disrespectful. So
definitely. And do you feel as well your record? You know, you're a guy who's, you know, you haven't been able to get fights in the past. You've taken fights on short notice, and you've beaten guys like Dave Hill, and obviously more recently Martin Svensson, who recently fought for the Cage Warriors title.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, my record is a little bit obviously doesn't look great on when you look at the numbers, and partially due to the fact that I wasn't maybe very smart with some of the choices that I made in the past. Like, I would take, you know, fights while being injured. Like, I fought with a broken hand before. Yeah. I've taken fights when I was so sick that I could barely get out of bed, but I didn't want to pull out of the fight and still went in and fought and then end up losing the fight. Like, I'm not going to say which fights they were because I do not want to take anything away from the guys that, you know, got the wins and they deserved it and they beat me 100% fair and square. But at the same time, I did make a very silly choices. But, I've learned from that and... I think it's not a bad idea to take a fight on short notice, providing you're ready, you know, providing you have been training, providing, you know, that you are healthy and ready to go.
Is there any of those fights you really regret? And is there anything you've actually learned from you know, taking those fights and possibly, you know, you should have pulled out of some of those fights, Artem?
Yeah, I definitely did. And I learned a very good lesson that probably could be applied not only for martial arts, but for just life in general. It is good to take risks, but only when you're ready to take the risk.
Obviously, talking about your opponent, Cage Warriors 65 in the Helix in Dublin on March the 1st, Alex Annan, what are you expecting from this?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, I've learned a lot in the past few years, and I've really, you know, starting to pick up the speed, and I'm starting to get some momentum behind me, and I think that I'm becoming a fighter that I want to be eventually. You know, I'm still quite young in the sport. Like, I haven't been training that long. Like, when I fought Dave Hill, just 6 months before that fight, I had my amateur debut, not even a pro debut. So, like, you know, I'm only young in terms of, you know, MMA years. And I think I'm still learning, you know. And I expect in this fight, you know, to show what I can actually do. I did show it in before in, you know, some cases, but maybe not as consistently. But now I kind of want to get some consistency going and get another very good win, you know, in a row now after Martin Svensson.
Definitely. And sorry, just going back a little bit there, you know, some of the fights that you took in the past, is there someone you'd like to avenge in the coming months? I know you've tried to get the Saul Rogers fight again. Is there anything you'd be interested in the next few months to take?
Yeah, I would really love to fight, actually, Jay Furness, because, like, when I fought him, I mean, and again, I will say this, like, and he knows this, you know, I've said it to him. He bet me fair and square. It was a good fight. You know, he's a very tough fighter. But I would like to rematch him just for the fact that I would like to actually do it at featherweight this time. Because if you can remember, that time I weighed in at featherweight, but my opponent pulled out on the day and Jay stepped in. He was nice enough to step in on the day. You know, that was took a lot of, you know, heart from him to do it. But at the same time, I weighed in at 66 and he weighed in at 75 kilos. You know, so, and if you take into consideration the style that he uses, kind of, you know, grinding style, you know, using the weight, it would play a big difference, I think, in the fight. So I really would like to rematch him at featherweight and see how that goes then.
Definitely. Love to see that one again. Getting back to Cage Warriors, obviously, you know, fighting in your hometown of Dublin, Ireland. How exciting is that for you to be back on the Cage Warriors roster on a big card here in Dublin?
Yeah, it's great. I was surprised, actually, when I didn't see my face on their poster, to be honest. But yeah, I'm not the one calling the shots. But anyway, yeah, it's going to be great. Yeah, it's going to be great being on the show and in the Helix as well. I never, you know, I went to college in DCU. Like, I did my undergrad there and then did a master's there as well. So it's going to be nice for me to be fighting there.
And Artem, we know you've a history of ballroom dancing. Your style is very exciting. You tend to keep your hands down quite a lot, and you know you've big power in your right hand and your uppercut. How much has ballroom dancing, you know, helped your mixed martial arts career? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, people often ask me this, and if I'm honest, I don't really know. But one thing I will say is that I do think that it definitely helped me with my footwork. You know, just moving around the cage or the ring or whatever it is. You know, I feel very comfortable. I feel very comfortable switching stance. So I definitely think, and also your your coordination and your balance and all this, I do think that dancing can benefit.
And just talking a little bit about what's going on at the moment, but obviously you corner Connor in a lot of his fights, and you're down with SBG. That's your gym, the new gym down there, and the new facility. For the future, you know, it's a real modern state of the art facility. How much better the guy's gonna, you know, evolve as mixed martial artists being down in that brilliant new setup down on the Long Mile Road?
Yeah, I think it's gonna be very big for us, especially I think you'll be able to see this year just how much of a difference that's gonna make. It's just, you see, once you walk into SBG now, the way the setup is there, like, you start learning from the moment you walk in there. Yeah. You know, you see there's, you know, people grappling on one side, there's people boxing on the other, there's, you know, you get to spar and train with some of the best fighters in Europe, and in the future there will be the best fighters in the world as well. And when you step off the mat, you get to watch them, you know, train, and you continue learning. So as soon as you step, go through those doors, you start learning, and your learning doesn't stop until you leave. So it's great, and I think, you know, you're going to see it this year again. I know people, you know, a lot of people say, oh yes, our gym is this and that, and, you know, everybody likes to say this about their gym, but honestly, like, I wouldn't be saying it if I didn't believe it. Like, trust me, I've always been, like, very honest in my opinion about things and vocal about it, and I really, really believe that this year is going to be huge for SBG. And if I had to, like, say it out loud, I do think that there's going to be many fighters, and I mean many fighters from SBG in the UFC by the end of this year.
Definitely, completely agree with you. Talking about constant improvement, you know, the guys in SBG, everyone seems to be evolving, especially in the last year. We've seen, you know, obviously Connor come to the forefront. We've Colin and Chris now, and there's loads of other guys in there with huge potential, such as yourself. How inspiring is it to see those guys, you know, sort of get to the next level of their career and, you know, working so closely with them?
Oh, it's unreal. You see, when you're a fighter and you're training and, you know, like back in the day, you know, in a cold, smelly little gym, you know, and you, yeah, it's freezing, and, you know, you go on Saturday night and you watch UFC and you see all those fighters there, and you're like, there is Dana. And then to suddenly, like, this is when this moment of truth kind of happened for me, is when I cornered Connor in Sweden. I was there, you know, I can see all of them. I can see Dana. There is the cage. There are the lights. There is the crowd. There are those letters, UFC, you know, it's right there. You know, I suddenly realized that this is real. Here it is, my teammate. I spar him every day. I train with him every day, and he is there. So it is possible for me to be there as well. And you know, that was such a huge motivation for me.
Brilliant. Just before we are going to speak to you a little bit more Sweden in a second. But just before that, John Kavanagh, obviously the godfather of the grandfather of Irish mixed martial arts, as he's known.
He's not that old. Come on, man.
We know John well here on the show and the other guys. But how much of an influence has John been on your career, and how much of a great leader is John?
As far as my career, he's been everything pretty much for me in terms of, you know, MMA and learning how to fight. But the main thing I have to stress is that it's not just John as in one person being a coach and his coaching abilities, which are amazing, but the fact that he built SBG in Ireland. He built this place where you can come in and it's like a a net where you can learn. You know, it's a network of different people, and you can learn from everyone. You can learn something else from somebody else, you know, and that's been the amazing part. So now you could nearly, like, even when he is not there, sometimes there, it's still, you know, very, very good place to be, because he has built it up to be this way. You know, he's the mentality that he has taught all his, all the fighters, and not only fighters, all the coaches that coach in SBG, and all the guys that train there. It's just a constant learning curve for everyone, and it's just you're surrounded by people that want to help you and that can help you and that know a lot. You know, it's just great.
Brilliant stuff. And I know getting back to Sweden there, I know you spoke with Sean Shelby over in Sweden while we were over there. He mentioned to you, you know, if you got the record up to a positive record, which it is at the moment, and a few more fights, that, you know, he'd like to have you in the UFC. What was that conversation all about? And can you, you know, explain a little bit more of what Sean said to you?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, I was kind of obviously, you know, just talking to him about my record and, you know, how I've been fighting and this and that. And he's seen some of my fights in the past. You know, he's seen the Dave Hill fight, I think, and he liked my style, and that's what they like in the UFC. They like exciting, you know, fighters. But obviously, my record was great, but I was just saying to him, look, I just want to fix my record a little bit, you know, improve it, and then I'll try for the Ultimate Fighter. And he said, well, you know, don't bother with the Ultimate Fighter, just, you know, get your record sorted, and then we'll talk again, and, you know, we'll still give you a shot in the UFC. And, you know, so I've been trying to work on my record since. Yeah, so yeah, I've been trying to work on my record since then, and hopefully, you know, I get to. My plan now is to get to about 11, you know, get 11 wins.
Yeah.
And 10, 11 wins, and I think I should be good to go now. Because, you know, like I said, I'm not just saying this. I mean, I do have very exciting style, and I do have very unusual style, something that no one in the UFC has, you know, like as a similar style to mine. There are a lot of obviously exciting guys there, but with the same style as mine, I don't think so. And I think the fans would enjoy that. And that's what it's all about. You know, it's about entertainment. That's another thing I actually wanted to mention. I hate those guys that, you know, the human blankets, I call them. I mean, what's the story with that? Like holding people down in the cage. I mean, seriously, like some of the guys, they have such a boring style that you can cure insomnia with that shit. I mean, I'm not even joking. Because, like, to me, MMA and UFC especially is about, first of all, entertainment, because without fans there is no UFC, there is no MMA, and second of all is about fighting, and holding somebody down is neither entertaining nor is it fighting. So guys, if you're listening and you're one of those blanket boys, stop this shit and start fighting.
Brilliant stuff, Artem. And Artem, obviously you mentioned there, you know, you on Twitter, you know, you've been calling out guys, etc. Are you trying to get in as many fights in this year to possibly get on that Dublin card in the UFC? And it's probably looking at September at this stage.
Well, obviously it is in my sight. I'm not going to lie about this, but I mean, I've always loved fighting. When I first started fighting, in my first 8 weeks, I had 4 fights. So, you know, I love fighting. This is, you know, this is me. Like I'm not just trying to, you know, get the fights in so I can get into the UFC. Of course I want to be in the UFC, but first of all, I love fighting. I'm doing this for the love of fighting. I love being in the cage. I love being in there. This is the only place, that cage is the only place where I can relax. You know, once you're in there is no global warming. There is no financial crisis. It's just you and your opponent, and you're just fighting. And I love that. You know, this is what I want to do. I really enjoy doing it. So I try and do it as often as I can.
Brilliant stuff, Artem. We could use more guys like you around, definitely, in the world of mixed martial arts. Artem, just before we wrap up the interview, you just mentioned there, you know, you obviously like to fight quite frequently, etc. Could you talk a little bit about the risk-reward of that? Because, you know, also there's setbacks possibly as well. How do you deal with them, or how do you cope with them if they come to the forefront?
Yeah, the risk-reward is bad. I mean, if this was an investment, no one would ever invest in this. Like, I mean, there's so much risk and so little reward in MMA. I mean, if I told you what I get paid for some of the fights, or even like my up-and-coming fight, I mean, I'm not even joking, you probably wouldn't believe me. Like, you'd laugh in my face. And the amount of work that goes into it, it is just crazy. I mean, I have a full-time job because I mean, there's no way I would be able to survive on what I get paid in MMA, that's for sure.
Definitely.
So, the risk-reward isn't great.
Yeah, definitely. And Artem, just before we wrap up the interview, how is this fight going to go down on March the 1st in the Helix in Dublin? What are you going to do to...
I'm looking to have a very exciting fight, as I always do, and I really, really want to get another knockout. I really want to get another KO in a row, you know, second KO in a row. That would be really, really good. So that's what I'm going for. You know, I'm going to be swinging for my life in there, and I wouldn't want to be Alex Anlund there, I'll tell you that.
Brilliant stuff. And just before we wrap it up, Chris Fishgold and Ian Entwistle, I know you've been going to a bit of war with them on Twitter the last couple of weeks. Have you any words for those guys?
Well, I haven't been going to war with them, because you go to war with warriors. Those two are sissies, you know what I mean? There are no warriors, like no war there. Like, I just gave the two of them a little bit of slapping and that's it. And, you know, I wanted to make a real man out of these two, but obviously, you know, they're scared and they don't want to do it. So, you know, they're going to remain with their fluffy little records and hiding away whatever they are. So that's it. That's all I got to say about that.
Brilliant stuff. And Artem, anyone you'd like to give a shout out to, any thanks, any sponsors before we wrap up the interview?
Yeah, I just want to thank my coach, John Kavanagh, and obviously everyone at Straight Bus Gym Ireland, helping me train day in, day out. Without them, I wouldn't be here, that's for sure. So thank you.
And Artem, what's your Twitter handle? It's Prospect Killer, isn't that correct? The guys can hit you up.
Prospect Killer.
Artem, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, mate, and really, really do appreciate the time.
Same here. Thanks very much, Fano.
Hey there, Boss Rudin here, a.k.a. El Rumpo. You are listening to Talking Brawls. Woo!
And that was Artem Lobov, an absolute character, to say the least. Absolute gentleman as well. Good bloke. And best of luck to Artem before his fight on March the 1st in Helix, which is sure to be an absolute barn burner of a fight against Alex Anlund. I was calling him Ian earlier on. I get mixed up between him and Ian Entwistle. Don't tell me, don't ask me why, but you know yourself, these things happen. So you can obviously catch Artem on Twitter at Prospect Killer. So hit him up with a follow on that. Also, you can catch us on Twitter at Talking Brawls and at Niall McGrath 4. And I'm going to be launching a live show on Sunday night. Damon Martin from Fox Sports is going to be joining me on Sunday night. That will be streamed live on the website. So hit it up on www.talkingbrawls.com. Can't wait for Artem's fight. Really looking forward to that one. Really looking forward to that card in the Helix Cage Warrior 65. So if you haven't already, get along to that. Get your tickets sorted. Go to cagewarriors.com for ticket details. Absolute great promotion. Europe's premier mixed martial arts promotion. Just before we get to the co-main event, the main event of the evening, as I've talked about there, I think we should probably put on the Ricardo Lamas interview next. Ricardo, you know, as I've mentioned earlier on, I think if there's anyone who's going to beat the champion and one of the pound-for-pound best fighters in the world, it's going to be Ricardo Lamas. I think his style really does... you know, cause problems for Jose Aldo. I think this is going to be a really, really good fight, potential fight of the night in my eyes on this card. So let's get to that interview right now with the Bully. I think it's the third time back on the show. Let's get to the interview with Ricardo Lamas, and I'll be back to talk about the co-main event and main event of the evening. Thanks, guys.
This is Dennis Bermudez, and you're listening to Talking Brawl.
Delighted to welcome back on the show a good friend of the show at this stage. I think it's his third time being on the show. Ricardo, first of all, I really do appreciate the time. I know you've been cutting away tonight and you've had a lot of stuff to do during the week. First of all, mate, how are things? How are you keeping?
I'm doing good, man. You know, I just want to get this weight cut over with and jump on the scale so I can rehydrate.
Definitely. And Ricardo, obviously, going into this week, it's been, you know, it's the biggest fight week of your life. How's the mentality coming into this week?
It's actually been surprisingly relaxed. You know, the UFC has been keeping me so busy that I haven't really been thinking too much about the fight. So it was kind of good. It kind of kept me distracted. And I've just been enjoying it. You know, I'm not used to getting this much attention and this much media and press. So I've just been enjoying it and taking it in.
Definitely, man. You told me last time you're on the show, you're looking forward to this. You're a bit of an attention whore when the camera comes on you. Have you really enjoyed that side of it this week?
Yeah, it's always good when people want to talk to you. You know, I got to enjoy it now because there's going to come a day when the cameras aren't going to be there anymore and nobody's going to want to talk to me. I'm going to be an old man telling people about how I used to fight and they're not going to want to hear about it. So I better get it out of my system now.
Definitely, man. And getting to the fight, obviously, this week, I spoke to you about, I think it was in October, and you talked to me about the guy you're trained with, Luis Palmino from World Series of Fighting. He's your Jose Aldo. Have you been working with this guy ahead of this fight again?
Yeah, he's Palomino's been my main training partner for every one of my fights since about 2010. So he's been my main training partner for this fight, just like the rest of them.
What's going on in the training camp? How much have you evolved as a fighter in the last 11 months?
I've evolved tremendously, man. I really spent the time to work on myself as a fighter and get better in every different area. And that's something that you can't do all the time because you're going from camp to camp preparing for a certain person instead of fixing yourself. So I've been able to work on myself this whole past year, and I think everybody's going to see the best Ricardo Lamas yet in the cage on Saturday.
Definitely, Ricardo. And I know you gained your black belt under Daniel Valverde, the MMA Masters in Florida. That must only add to your confidence going into this fight. Another tool to add to your repertoire of tools going into this fight against Jose Aldo.
Yeah, of course. Daniel Valverde is one of the best in the world at jiu-jitsu, so to be recognized in his eyes as the black belt is a real honor. And if anything, it pushes me to train harder because now I got an X on my back. And you know, guys always want to tap a black belt out, so they come after me in the gym, so I got to stay on my toes always now.
And how long did that take to get your black belt? Because I know you were on Brown for quite some time. Daniel Valverde, he's one of the tougher guys to get a black belt under.
Yeah, I've been doing jiu-jitsu for about 7 years. When I went to MMA Masters, I was a purple belt, and that's when I started training with Daniel Valverde. So I was with him for 4 years, and he promoted me to Brown. In 2011, I had my brown belt for, 3 years, and then they promoted me to black.
Looking at this fight, obviously we know Jose's, such a good Muay Thai fighter. You're so good at, going to the deck and, getting ground and pound is your game and your submissions and all that. What's the plan on this fight? Is it to get it to the ground and, take Jose to the later stages of the fight?
I'm not going to be desperate for the takedowns. I think that's when Jose catches people, when they're just blindly shooting in and not setting up their takedown. If it's there, I'll set it up well and I'll execute it. But if it's not, I'm not going to be afraid to stand with him.
Fighting a guy like Jose Aldo with all the talk and, one of the pound-for-pound best fighters in the world, how much of this camp has been, psychological and mental and keeping yourself focused leading into this week?
Every single camp is just as much mental as it is, physical. So this hasn't really been any different. I've been trying to look at this as any other camp. I've been trying to look at Jose as just any other opponent. I know this is going to be the toughest fight of my life, but I think that going into every single fight. So my mentality has been the same, whether it's my first fight in the UFC or whether I'm fighting for the belt. I'm very strong mentally, and I'm not going to be broken mentally or physically.
What do you think Jose is going to do in this fight to, try and take you out? Have you, focused on that, or is it more about focusing on what you're going to do in this fight?
I think he's going to try and play his game. I think I'm going to try and play mine. If he comes forward, we're going to end up butting heads because I'm going to come forward. I just see a war going on, man. That's what I'm going to have to do to earn this belt. I'm going to have to go to war. I see, visions of both of us bleeding, both of us with swollen faces, and just going to it, man. I got to go through hell to be a world champion because that's how you got to earn something like that.
Definitely. Do you see this going to later rounds, Ricardo? Because a lot of the, the MMA media are saying, and it is, it's a fact. We've seen Jose, fade in the later rounds, in the championship rounds, and we know you're a guy that you can step up that extra gear. Is this where you're looking to take the fight?
Yeah, everybody gets tired going to the later rounds, and that's when heart and determination and will come into play. And I won't let myself think that I'm tired. If my body is tired, I will keep pushing myself until the absolute limit. So if it goes into the later rounds, I'm definitely going to be prepared for that and I'll be able to push.
Do you really feel, obviously looking back, we've seen Weidman, come to the forefront at the end of last year. We've seen GSP, everyone thought, Hendricks won that title fight. Is there a shift in the movement of, a shift in the landscape, so to speak, Ricardo?
Every champion has to fall. Everybody has to pass the torch sometime. So definitely there could be a movement going on, and we're going to find out on Saturday if Jose Aldo is going to pass the belt or not.
Just another question. Dana White and the way the UFC have sort of, treated this fight, it's all good, saying in hindsight. Would you have preferred this fight to be in Chicago, last week at UFC on Fox 10? And how happy are you with the UFC, the way they've promoted this fight?
I would have loved to fight in my hometown. It's always nice fighting in your hometown. You get to sleep in your own bed and cook your own meals. But I can't complain because I'm fighting on one of the biggest cards in sports history. It's Super Bowl weekend.
Definitely.
So there's you know, advantages and disadvantages to both. But I think the UFC did a good job promoting this fight. I've been seeing the commercials playing, and, you know, I get comments from friends saying that they've seen billboards or seen commercials or whatever. So they've done a good job, just like always.
Just another thing about, you know, that sort of the way the UFC have promoted. Dana White talked about a potential super fight between Jose Aldo and Anthony Pettis. Does that spur you on when he talks about things like that to, you know, prove everyone wrong and become that underdog and, you know, win this fight?
Yeah, you know, I definitely have to prove everybody wrong. I know I'm coming in as the underdog, and it's no different than many of my other fights in the UFC. But, you know, other people's opinions don't matter to me. I'm going to go in and do what I do, and that's it.
Definitely, man. And just before we wrap it up, I know you're very proud. You know, you're half Mexican and half Cuban. And your dad means a lot to you. What would it mean for you to bring this title home, back to Chicago, to your dad?
It means everything, man. You know, my family's been behind me, supporting me since day one through this whole thing. So to be able to supply a world championship for them would mean absolutely everything. That's what motivates me the most, is making my family proud and making my friends proud.
Awesome stuff, man. And what's the end result going to be? What way is this fight going to finish on Saturday night?
With blood splattered all over the cage and me getting my hand raised at the end.
Ricardo, I know it's been a very tough week for you, and I really do appreciate you taking the time out to speak to us guys here in Ireland and in Europe. And listen, best of luck, mate. And we've obviously followed your career closely, and I hope everything goes well for you on Saturday night, mate.
All right, thanks a lot, buddy.
This is Bruce Buffer, your voice of the UFC Octagon. And now, we are live at Talking Brawls.
And that was Ricardo, the Bully Lamas, who obviously goes up against Jose Aldo for the UFC featherweight title this Saturday night in Newark, New Jersey, in the Prudential Center. So can't wait for that one. So let's talk a little bit about this fight. As I mentioned there, I'm going to favour Jose Aldo. I think, you know, this fight is going to be a barn burner. I think it's going to go the whole way. I just, you know, I think the problem is here, you know, Jose Aldo is going to be so hard to take down for Ricardo. But, you know, his Muay Thai is so good. He's so good standing up on his feet. But if there's ever a guy, I think, personally, to beat Jose Aldo, it's Ricardo Lamas. I think stylistically, this match is, it's a fascinating matchup, because Ricardo, if he does happen to get the fight to the ground, we've seen him as Eric Koch last year in Chicago. You know, this guy is vicious. We've seen in the Cub Swanson fight, he can get submissions on the deck. If he can get this on the deck, Ricardo Lamas has every chance of pulling off an upset. Don't take that lightly. I promise you that when I say this. He does have a genuine chance, because we saw against Eric Koch. You know, Eric Koch was a guy he was supposed to fight for the title last year. I think he's ranked number 10 now. But, you know, taking out a guy like Cub Swanson as well in the fashion he did, submitted him, made him tap out. This guy is a genuinely, you know, talented fighter on the deck. His ground and pound is incredible once he gets it going. He's very decent on the stand-up as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see where this goes. And I know he's a very hungry guy. I spoke to him off-air there as well. And he's seriously bummed for this fight. But it's going to be a barmer. I'm going to shade. I think it's going to be a really good fight. But I think Jose Aldo is going to do enough. I think his speed is going to be massive in this fight from you know, avoiding what Lamas brings. But if Ricardo can get this fight past the third round, this is going to be a fight that's going to be a lot closer than a lot of people think. And I would not write off Ricardo Lamas, but I'm just going to favour the champion by edge in this one. It's going to be a barn burner. Can't wait for it, guys. Check it out. And so let's get to it. The main event of the evening, Henan Barão, the world bantamweight champion, going up against challenger Uriah Faber. And with, you know, this fight, I know the last fight wasn't particularly good at 149. Uriah Faber mentioned in an interview I listened to during the week that he didn't feel motivated going into this fight, but I can rest assured that Uriah is going to be motivated now for this fight. It's for the world title. You know, a guy who's probably my fighter of the year in 2013. You know, those three wins, absolutely incredible performances, really, really look good. Obviously starting the year off against Menjivar, beautiful submission, and then obviously finishing the year off in the style which he did was quite incredible about 3 weeks ago against Michael McDonald. And Michael McDonald, guy I'm going to mention now as well, you know, this is where I think this fight's going to be. There's a real key to this fight for Uriah Faber. If he can use that stand-up like he did against Michael McDonald,
he's going to test Barrow. We saw Barrow against Michael McDonald last year at UFC London, and he didn't like it when he got hit in the face by Michael McDonald. Michael McDonald got inside his range, put him to the floor at one stage, rocked him a lot. If Uriah can do that, and he's improved so much under Dwayne Van Ludwig in his standing, as we saw against the fight Michael McDonald, he's a real key to victory in this fight. If he keeps the pressure on Barrow, if he forces Barrow not to let his style flow, this fight is going to be a very, very close fight. I can see it going the five rounds. I'm going to look for Uriah Faber to upset the odds in this fight. I think Faber, his intensity, everything that Dwayne Van Ludwig has brought to him, I think he's a much more complete fighter than he has been. And that's a big compliment to Uriah, because he's 35 years of age. Barrow's 29. This is a barn burner of a fight, in my opinion. I think it's going to be a lot better than it was last time. Uriah said he's motivated now. A lot of people are favouring Barrow. Barrow's an animal. This guy is everything in his locker. But I just think the time is now for Uriah. It's now or never. It's do or die. And I think this is the week. I think he's going to be the first ever world champion in the UFC from Team Alpha Male. Obviously, Uriah's a former WEC champion, but they've never had a UFC title holder in Team Alpha Male. So that's what I'm going to say with this fight. I really can't wait for this one. I think it's an absolute barn burner. I think the co-main event and main event of the evening are absolutely awesome. So really looking forward to this stuff tonight. Just can't wait for it. But that's my breakdown. That's the week in news. And guys, listen, as I said to you, I really always appreciate you listening in. But to make this show get better and to help us out, hit the subscribe button on iTunes and check out the website www.talkingbrawlsmixmartialarts.com. Some great stuff on it. And Andrew McGahan will be joining me next week. I didn't have him on this week because I had a lot of problems getting a couple of interviews this week, and as I said to you earlier on, my editing system crashed on me on Thursday night, so that was a bit of a nightmare. So I've got it back up and running now, so looking forward to the coming weeks, definitely. And 2014 is going to be an absolute barn burner of a year for mixed martial arts. So you can catch me on Twitter as well, at IonMcGrath4 and at Talking Brawls. And obviously, as mentioned earlier on, we've Keith Fitzpatrick on doing some writing, on Joe Riley, some great stuff up on the website there from those guys. A great interview actually with Nick Lemby, the Nevada State Athletic Commissioner, which Joe did there. It's a fantastic read, so check that stuff out. And also, obviously, as I mentioned, subscribe on iTunes, check out the website, all that good stuff. But listen guys, really looking forward to this Sunday night. I'm doing a live show which will be streamed on the website. I'm going to be speaking to Damon Martin. We're going to be talking all things UFC 169. So definitely stay posted on Twitter and on the website for that. I think it's going to be up and running at 10 p.m. GMT, which is obviously 5 p.m. Eastern time and 2 p.m. Pacific time if you're listening in on the States. So nice one, guys. Really appreciate it. So from Niall McGrath, it's good luck and good night. Thanks.